We're having a lot of fun producing La Rundown, so we're seeking support from advertisers to help keep it going for the long run. You can help too. We have a short anonymous survey that shouldn't take longer than a pre-run warm-up. Your answers will help us find great advertisers that help match the cadence of each show and your interests. Complete the survey and enter for a chance to win a pair of Skechers Performance running shoes. You can find the survey link in the episode description. Terms and conditions apply. Welcome to La Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Antoine Jolicoeur Desroches.
Yeah, I think sometimes you need to like remember that you're doing it for having fun, because it's easy to just be too serious. Like sometimes I get caught up in everything, in the training and the competition and like making sure everything works well, like my nutrition, my equipment. And then I'm like, okay, just remember, like just take a deep breath and remember like you're doing this for having fun. And then that's when I start to enjoy it even more.
On this episode of La Rundown, I had a chat with the national Canadian record holder in the half marathon and marathon, Rachel Cliff. We spoke while she was in town for the Canadian Track and Field Championship, where she placed third in the 10,000 meter. 2 weeks later, she took home the bronze for Canada at the Pan Am Games in Peru. She's a talented athlete with a powerful story of perseverance. She was denied a spot on the 2016 Olympic team, despite running the 5,000 meter standard. Now she's back, stronger than ever, with her sights set on 2020 in Tokyo. Are you already subscribed to La Rundown? Running with WRG and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, we've said it before and we'll say it again. Tasha Wodak is on fire. After winning the Vancouver Half Marathon in June, Wodak picked up her first major games medal at the 2019 Pan Am Games in Lima last weekend. It was a gold medal, of course, winning with a time of 31 minutes and 55 seconds. This was a really significant win for Wodak, given all she has overcome in her running career. La Rundown wants to give Tasha a huge congrats. If you haven't already, make sure to listen to episode 22 to hear more about Wodak's journey. The Canadian athletics team made some really impressive strides at the 2019 Pan Am Games. Less than a minute behind Wodak was marathoner Rachel Cliff, with a time of 32 minutes and 13 seconds. Cliff proudly snagged the spot on the podium and a bronze medal to boot. As runners, we know how much we love to get lost in music while we're moving. The Oasis Rock and Roll Marathon is rapidly approaching. Owned and operated by the Ironman folks, the Rock and Roll Marathon series combines live music, cheerleading, themed water stations, running, and community for a fun and active weekend in 25 cities all over the world. On September 21st and 22nd, the marathon series will sweep through Montreal, offering several races with distances for everyone. I'll personally be running the half marathon this year. Choose from a 1K, 5K, 10K, half or full marathon, and take in the beauty of the city of Montreal. Be sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. Recently on the show, we've had the 10,000 meter national record holder among the female athletes in Tasha Wodak. Today, we're lucky enough to have the national marathon and half marathon Canadian record holder in Rachel Cliff. So I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming on La Rundown. Appreciate having you in, and it's actually, you know, a big week for track and field in Canada, and Montreal's lucky to host the champs here. So
yeah, it's been great to be out here. It's the first time I've been to Montreal in the summer, so it's a little bit nicer than in the winter.
Yeah, a little less cold.
Yeah, exactly. I can see why people live here in the summer. In the winter, it's miserable.
So that was actually last night, and ended up finishing third, which is a huge result, so congrats on that one.
Thank you. Yeah, I've missed the podium 2 years in a row. I didn't do it last year, but the year before and the year before that, I was fourth. So I was really happy to get on the podium this year.
And what distance was that?
The 5K as well. Like, I've won the national 10K champs since, but the 5,000 meter, I just kept coming fourth, so I was happy to be third this year.
Nice. And some pretty stiff competition too, I guess?
Absolutely, yeah. Actually, distance running in Canada right now, just in general, is so deep. And it's exciting to be a part of the 5K. I've been doing it for, like, the 5K at Nationals since, I think, 2009. Maybe it was 2008, but 1 year I placed fourth with a time of 17:04, which nowadays I don't even know if that would have been a top 20 place. So the depth in the 5K, it's been really fun to watch and kind of be a part of it taking off and developing.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And it's funny, like, just thinking, I was reflecting on it just the other day, like having you in today is it's amazing. And we've been so lucky in our first year of doing this show that we've had like a bunch of top female Canadian athletes in all different distances. But yeah, really fortunate to be able to witness this at this time. It's kind of a special time for women's running, I think.
Totally. I mean, I'm not sure if the 3K record, the 3K indoor record was set this year. I'm not sure about the outdoor, but every record from the 5K to the marathon's been set and sometimes reset in the past few years, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keeps pushing you to get better, I guess.
Exactly, yeah, and it's fun because it's across all event groups. It's not just one event that's taking off. It seems like they all are.
Exactly. So it's okay. Yeah, coming off a bit of a cold, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to get into it and see, like, what was your upbringing like and were you athletic as a kid and what was that? What was it like to be Rachel as a...
As a kid?
Yeah.
I got into the sport in hindsight quite young. My parents kind of had a rule when we were kids that we had to do one sport. They wanted us to be active, and they really didn't care what it was, just as long as we did something. So when I was in elementary school, I played soccer. I was obsessed with riding horses, so I always did like a week or two of summer horseback riding camp. And then, yeah, distance running just... It wasn't that it came naturally to me per se, but I was really uncoordinated. So the other sports didn't come naturally, and cross country doesn't have tryouts and anything like that. But I just really enjoyed, like, even as a little kid, I grew up doing a lot of camping and hiking. That was kind of my favorite activity. It was every summer we'd go up to my parents' cabin on an island called Bowen Island, or we'd go camping for a few weeks. And kayaking and just being outside. I was always really outdoorsy. So distance running, especially cross country, for me, was just kind of a way to keep doing that as a sport and something that my parents would kind of let me do. So I did kind of like road races with my friends. And looking back, I was naturally quite talented, I think, even at that age, but I just didn't really identify it. So, but doing like a kind of local 5K road race when I was in grade 4 or 5 or something. And I was running with a bunch of friends and I got separated from them on the start. And I just assumed that they were ahead of me because I was kind of maybe not the most confident kid, and I just couldn't have imagined I was ahead of them. So I ran faster and faster trying to catch them. And then at some point I kind of figured they probably were behind me at that point, and I just finished the race. I don't know how I actually ran, but I have a lot of memories like that as a kid where I didn't think of myself as a good athlete, but, I had a few moments like that. And so I wasn't, naturally fast. So track and field, in elementary school, is like a 400, 800. So that wasn't necessarily my calling. But, I just loved cross country. And as I got older, I got more and more into it. So in grade 9, my parents, I kind of outgrew my parents telling me I had to do a sport. And so I didn't end up doing track and field that year, and I missed it so much, and I didn't realize it until the end of the year that I kind of had wished I'd done track that spring. And then the next year in grade 10 was when I bought my first pair of track spikes, and ended up placing fifth, I believe, in a provincial championships for BC High Schools, and that was exciting for me. And then I think ever since then I've taken it pretty seriously. I've had good years and bad years, but... Yeah, grade 10, I think, for me, was when the first year that I really identified as an athlete.
And then your upbringing was in BC?
Yeah, in Vancouver, okay. Yeah.
And was that like, was it always just fun for you? You did it through school? Was that kind of part of the running?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just think I always kind of enjoyed it. Every kid gets nervous on the start line. I don't think anyone, even as an adult, no one enjoys racing. It's stressful and it's painful and stuff. But grade six, I remember sitting in school and kind of watching the clock tick down because I had cross country practice after school. And I couldn't wait for the clock to tick so I could go do cross country. And I really didn't identify as an athlete at that point. I wasn't part of a track and field club outside of my elementary school, anything like that. But I think that even then I knew it was something that meant a lot to me. I also had some really good access to some good coaches at a young age. One of my elementary school teachers was actually a national team athlete back in the day in running. And I think that she could see something in me. I don't know if she knew how far I'd end up actually going, but she was really encouraging. And I've been quite fortunate that my high school coach was actually the former steeplechase record holder for Canada. He coached me for 2 years. He was super humble, so I didn't actually realize until he stopped coaching me how fast he was back in his day. But I've been really just fortunate to have a lot of role models and stuff like that from a young age.
So, and where did it go after high school?
I went to the University of Guelph, which anyone who knows distance running in Canada knows they're kind of a powerhouse. And so I wanted to stay in Canada for school, and I getting into it a little bit later, I hadn't written my SATs. I'd never considered going down to the U.S. on a scholarship. So I didn't really let that window open for me, and I was happy to stay in Canada. So Guelph was kind of a natural first choice, as they were the best program if you're going to stay in Canada. So I went there, and my first year went pretty well. And then I think being away from home, cooking for yourself for the first time, doing your laundry for your first time, I had a really complicated, I took a science undergrad, so I was trying to balance that and athletics. And there was kind of 2 years there that, my running really did not go well. I was running slower in my third year than I was in high school, which was frustrating. But now looking back on it, that's how the sport goes. I've had many years where I haven't improved. And then the next year I do, and I'm much more comfortable that it wasn't. Those 2 years at Guelph weren't actually that bad. They were part of a pretty normal development. And then my fourth year, it was all the improvement that I had expected to have over the course of 3 years happened in 1 year. And so I went from running 17 minutes in the 5K to running 16:07 and 10 minutes in the 3K to 9:20. And I won the national championships for CIS, or it's called U Sport now. But I won a few titles there, and then... when I graduated, I found myself at a crossroads of not being sure where I wanted to go. So I went back and did my master's. And then in that time, I managed to... I was back in Vancouver, and I started working with a new coach, and he was really good about letting me slowly kind of chip away at my times. So basically between kind of 2012 and 2016, I got my time from 16 low in the 5K to 15:23, kind of right at the Olympic standard level over the course of 4 years, but it was a very healthy and slow and smooth progression. I kind of shaved off 10 or 15 seconds each year, which is definitely how you want to do it. In the past, my development in the sport had been really erratic. I'd have a really good year, then a really bad year, and it wasn't sustainable or healthy or made me happy. But kind of those 4 years between 2012 and 2016, I really learned how the sport works, how running works, how to achieve big things and how to enjoy it. And so then I narrowly missed the Olympics. It was a bit of a fiasco in 2016. But one thing that came out of that is that I had no question when that year was over that this was something I wanted to do for the next 4 years. And the past, 3 years out of the last Olympics, and they've just been an awesome 3 years.
Cool. So. Can you shed some light on maybe some of the things that were different between not progressing as a runner and then all of a sudden seeing a progression? Is there some things you can pinpoint that would be helpful?
Yeah, I think now looking back on it as a senior athlete, I've been doing the sport now for 17 years, and it's just so funny because I would love to go back and like shake my early 20-year-old self and just be like, this is normal, you'll be fine. But I think a lot of people go through that. I think I've got it a lot easier on myself as one of the biggest changes is that when I was in university especially, I mean, I look back at like what I was trying to balance and, you know, full-time academics, being away from home at that age. I actually had a pet at that time, which was great. But
what was the pet?
It was a pet bunny, which wasn't a ton of work, but it was still like a living thing that, you know, you had to feed it. There was just a lot. I was, again, away from home, different place. Obviously, my running wasn't going to be where I wanted it to be, and I probably should have been a bit more at peace with that. But I think that, I think what's some of the big things that's changed in the past little bit of my confidence. I also just have years of mileage under my belt. And one thing that happened to me in university is I went through a period where I dropped a ton of weight really quickly and I saw a lot of positive results very quickly, but it wasn't a sustainable thing. And I tried to make it sustainable and it wasn't. And after that, that's when I kind of got sick and wasn't able to maintain my times. And then that made me more unhappy and we kind of went in circles. And for me, I think getting out of that cycle and just not worrying about trying to shave off 30 seconds or, you know, not taking time off after seasons and doing things like that, that in the short term allowed you to run quicker, but in the long run kind of hurt you. I think that, again, when I moved away from kind of that mindset, I was able to focus on training for 2 months and then take a few weeks off and then kind of just have more of a long-term development plan and know where you are right now. Like if you're running 16 flat for the 5K, you're not likely going to make the Olympics the next year, but it's not impossible for you to make it in 3 years. So I think I've come much more at peace at understanding that, you know, aiming for realistic goals each year.
Mm-hmm. And the weight loss, was that a purposeful thing?
Or? It wasn't. I think at the time it wasn't. I think that it's interesting when you've been running for long enough, I think eventually your body and your metabolism kind of changes. And that's what happened the first time around. But after that, there wasn't a second weight loss drop. And it was when I decided that for some strange reason, I decided there was a second weight loss drop. That was when I got myself in trouble. It was a short period of my life, but weight and sport are so tightly intertwined. It's really definitely, my mom's actually a dietitian, so I've always had a pretty good sense of healthy food and fueling. And it was probably the only period of my life where I actually lost sight of that.
And what do you eat now? Like, what's your, what is your diet like?
Especially when I was training for a marathon, you just have to consume a lot. So, I think one of the big things I've found is it's not about what you don't eat, it's about what you eat. And that's where I've always, not always, but especially recently tried to draw my focus is making sure that you're, for breakfast, you know, you have eggs, a smoothie and toast or whatever, but you make sure you get all your food groups in each meal. And I always try to make sure I have dessert once or twice a day, just year round, just it kind of keeps, you know, things laid back and kind of everything in moderation and nothing restricted. But one of the big things I find is trying to make sure that my meals are very just complete, because that's when you're going to get all your nutrients and your micronutrients in and stuff. And if you're skimping on those and being, you know, not making sure you have a healthy dinner, you're going to pay for it later. So I just try to focus on having three very nutrient-dense meals, and then whatever else I need to eat between them to stay full is important.
Mm. What's your go-to?
For meals?
Yeah.
Oh, anything. I love the Shalane Flanagan cookbook, the Run Fast, Eat Slow. In our house, we actually call it like the Bible because we all just cook from it. So she's got two of those. And then I also have a vegan cookbook that I use a lot. I eat meat. I'm not vegan, but maybe I'll make a vegan salad and then have meat, because I find that's a great way to ensure that you're getting enough protein, because you're eating something that someone who doesn't eat meat would consider a full protein source, and then you're adding meat on top of that. So that's something I do a lot.
Nice. I'm vegan, so so that's me all the time.
Okay. Yeah.
So you were talking about the and I was going to ask you what's the dessert? What do you go for?
Cookies. I love cookies.
Okay, nice.
I think that's kind of my go-to is anything with chocolate, just straight up chocolate cookies, store-bought homemade.
Nice.
And sprinkling it in there is nice. So it's not like all at once at one time. It's like I do the same thing. It's like grab a sweets in here. And
I think it's about as a mindset. If you're limiting yourself or you're saying this is off limits or whatever, if you're confident to just grab a cookie now and then, it's like a granola bar, basically.
Exactly. We'll say it is.
Yeah.
You said like the missing the Olympics it was a bit of a challenge there. Can you go through that with us?
Yeah, it was. So for me in 2015, I was kind of really close to the Olympics. I went 15:33, and I kind of knew that the next year it was possible. In 2011, I was a minute off the Olympic standard, and I tried to hit the Olympics in 2012, which was delusional, to put it lightly. And that was a really negative year. But in 2015, I found myself in this great spot where I knew I wasn't guaranteed by any stretch. I had to shave off, 10 seconds and be top three in the country to do it, which was a big ask. But I also knew that, it's possible. It's always possible to take 10 seconds off your 5K. So I kind of approached that year with a really, just a different mindset. And it was scary chasing a goal like that I'd never kind of articulated before. And so that year I graduated from my master's and then I really applied myself full to my running. And that was a strange transition as well, kind of letting go of your schooling and just being like, okay, I'm going to just run. And actually pretty quickly after I kind of strained my calf, it wasn't May of 2016, things weren't looking promising for me. But sometime during that month, I had this like epiphany where I realized that if I wasn't going to qualify for the Olympics, I didn't want to go to the Olympics. Like, I didn't want to go to the Olympics to be an Olympian. I wanted to go to the Olympics because I wanted to be a world-class athlete. And it sounds like the same thing, but it was a critical kind of change in philosophy for me, that it became less about outcome and more about, like, I wanted to be an athlete. I didn't want to be an Olympian. And I think once I made that switch, it was just really, like, a positive thing for me, and I was able to actually start working towards making the Olympics. So I attempted to run the standard in the 10K in a race down in Portland, and I missed it by 6 seconds, which I think that was, it was a good day for me. I don't know if I could have ran it that day, whether where my mindset was at or where my fitness was at. I was very close to running the standard, but I was really excited to be as close as I was that day. But the problem with that is there's not a lot of 10K opportunities. So the 10K was done. There was this last chance 5K, and I went to go chase the time there. And it was very much in my mind the last opportunity I would have to run the 5K. And we had this insane windstorm, rain. The wind died down for the race, but the pacing, it was a tough day to be pacing because it was raining so hard. So the pacers weren't quite able to hit the splits. And I remember coming in with 3K, and this is 4K, and looking at the clock and kind of quickly doing some mental math and being like, unless we run like a sub 3 minute last K, this is not going to happen. And then the next 200, we didn't pick up. So I knew that it wasn't going to happen. And in the past, I would have kind of packed in. And after that, it would have been like, oh, my goal's over. It's not going to happen. And that would have been that. But I think because my philosophy changed, it was like, okay, you're not going to the Olympics, but let's see how close you can get. And I actually closed really well. I ran a personal best that night. And it was just a really positive kind of race experience. And then I kind of got an opportunity in a local race to hit the standard, and I managed to pull it off by like 6 milliseconds. Like, it was nothing. But after that I was exhausted, like attempt after attempt after attempt, and I got it, but I just got it. And the 5K at Nationals has been really deep for the past 2 years, and that year was no exception, and I placed fourth. And I think between those two things, the selection committee decided to not take me. The fact I'd just squeaked into the standard and the fact I'd placed fourth at the trials, they decided to not select me, which that's always tough to get let down like that. But I think what was very challenging for me is that they could have taken three people and they chose to take two. So you could kind of piece apart why they made the decision they did and why maybe I didn't agree with it, but you could, maybe see the both sides of the story. But just to know that, the main thing standing between you and the Olympics was basically your own country. It was a really tough thing to go through. But, it probably took me 6 months of kind of processing that and putting it behind me. And I've, fortunately had a lot of support have been able to do that and just, you know, kind of leave it for what it is. And there's a lot more exciting things I've done on the sport, and I'm excited that, you know, a blip like that didn't affect my ability to keep competing after.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause that, yeah, that's got to be really disappointing.
Yeah.
mentally, it's got to be, and like the amount of frustration you must feel, it's got to be, yeah, it's got to be like overwhelming.
Yeah, I was lucky I had a lot of support. And one thing that sticks with me a lot is kind of the night we got the email that I wasn't going to be going to the Olympics. Was an interesting night because my husband qualified for the Olympics that night. So that has been his childhood dream. You know, he'd worked 8 years and I'd been a part of 4 of them towards making the Olympics. And the same night that he found out that he was officially going to the Olympics and, you know, fulfilling this lifelong dream was the same night that we found out I wasn't going, which is an interesting place as a couple to kind of go through together. And one thing that he said to me that night was he was like, don't let this define you. And I remember thinking like, he doesn't know what it feels like. Like, of course I want this to define me. Like, I want to go forward and do whatever because, you know, have this be like I got screwed over and I'm going to come back and come back stronger. But now looking back on it, I really like the way he put it of, you know, don't let this define you. Like, it was one committee's decision that they had the right to make. And I personally don't agree with leaving qualified athletes at home. I never have, never will. But that was their decision to make. And I don't want to be defined by something like that. And I think that, you know, I've gone on to do other things that have, you know, nothing to do with that. And I think that's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. And what did he get in with? What kind of athlete is your husband?
Oh, he's a steeplechaser.
Okay.
So he just missed qualifying for the Olympics in 2012. It's actually been kind of inspirational for me. He ran the B standard in 2012. I'm not sure if he had 1 or 2, but basically he couldn't go off the B standard because another athlete had the A standard, which wasn't anyone's fault but the IAAF's, but that was just the selection criteria was a little bit different back then.
Can you explain what that means, A standard?
I don't even know anymore because we don't have that, okay. Thankfully. But my butchered understanding, I could be wrong, is that they used to have this A standard that if you ran, you got to go. And then they had like a B standard, which if no one else in your country was going, you could use.
Okay.
But I think you needed 2 B standards, but I might be totally wrong. But I think it was like something like that, where he had an Olympic standard, but he couldn't go because of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like me in 2016, he'd kind of put his life on hold for, in retrospect, a short period of time and was like, I'm giving it everything to make the Olympics in 2012, and then I'm going to move on and get a career. And that was exactly me in 2016. And we both narrowly missed it for different reasons, but we both ultimately just missed the Olympics. And I think for both of us, it was actually a really positive thing because you know you can do it and you're so hungry because you haven't done it. And Chris made a ton of national teams between 2012 and 2016. And I think kind of like where I am now, that by the time 2016 came along, he obviously wanted to make the Olympics. But even if he didn't, he had an awesome career no matter what. And I think that's kind of, you know, where I'd consider myself right now is I'd love to make it in 2020. But even if that didn't happen, I'm really excited with, you know, what I've accomplished in isolation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's and as disappointing as that must be, like you're saying, like there's gotta be that fire that comes out eventually to go and get it.
Totally. And I think, in Canada and in general, we get this like fixated kind of view of the Olympics that if you don't make the Olympics, you're somehow not the same quality of an athlete as an athlete who did. And I think for both Chris and I coming so close to, you know, tasting it and then the next year doing something that would have realistically qualified you the year before for the Olympics makes you realize that, you know, making the Olympics is really impressive because it means that you pulled it together on the year that it counted and you only get 1 in every 4 years to do that. And so that's an amazing accomplishment in itself. But it's one of many amazing accomplishments you can have in the sport. And we're so fortunate to have the Olympics because I think it's something that the public can relate to and understand, and it makes everyone excited about the sport. But it's also not the only part of the sport. There's lots of really amazing Canadian athletes, American athletes who just have incredible resumes and careers and they're not Olympians. And I think that, you know, missing it like that is quite humbling in that sense.
Mm-hmm. So what was the path like after that? What was the... What was the goal after that?
The month after that was awful. I think I've kind of blocked it from my memory. But I ended up going down to VO and watching Chris compete, which was I would love to go back now as a spectator. Like now that I've been in the sport as a job, it's really fun to go to the Olympics as a spectator and just relax and unwind. And but I wasn't quite in that mindset at that point. But I went down, and that was helpful for my kind of recovery mentally, just to be there and to see it happening and not get to compete, but realize that wasn't actually that big a deal. And then I came home, and we went to Ireland with my family for 2.5 weeks, and that was really good to kind of completely hit the reset button. And then I decided after that I was definitely going to keep going. So I came back, and my first big goal was nationals cross country. So I came second. I'd wanted to win, but I came second. What was it? Second or third? Anyways, I medaled for sure, but I don't remember which place I was. And then qualified for the World Cross Country Championships, but decided to turn that down to focus on the half marathon. At that point, we kind of realized I was more of a 10K half marathon, even marathon type of runner.
And when you say we, it's you and your coach?
Me and my coach, yeah. So we decided to kind of make that, even during 2016, I mean, but when I missed it in the 10K, my coach was like, you've qualified in the 5K, but like you're really a 10K runner, and you know that's where you need to be focusing. And that was definitely something that came out of that year as well. It was just kind of discovered a little bit too late to make the switch for that year. So,
do you get the why that is? Why does the coach say? At what point does the coach say
what you should be doing?
Yeah,
I think for someone like me. Like, everyone has an event that they're kind of best at. And I think for me, I have this ability to hold paces for, like, a long time. The paces, if we have a tempo run or something that doesn't have rest, my paces aren't actually that much quicker than the ones where we have rest. So that's kind of not a good sign for the 5K, because it means I'm not kind of fast or strong enough to get the most in a short period of time out of my body. But it also means that, you know, I'm like a metronome. You kind of can just go. So that had become pretty clear that year. My closing speed, I've worked really hard on it, and I still think I can improve. I think some of it's mental, not physical, but some of it is physical. And I'm just not, you know, go to the gym, I do everything that way, but I'm just not built like kind of someone who can just close really quickly in the last few laps. And that's a lot of what the 5K is. But that's kind of the negative side. The positive side is that like, especially when I started training for the half marathon and then the marathon, like, Rich would give me, like, 4x5K, and he'd give me the times, and I'd be like, oh, okay, and I'd do it, and then he'd be like, wow, that was so exciting, you looked amazing, and it's like, well, I just did what you said, was that same workout for a 5K workout would be like, okay, I hope I can do it, and then maybe I'd do it, but I'd do the bare minimum, and I'd be excited, and he'd be kind of like, well, yeah, you did the workout, like, you know, so I think that was a really big sign.
Okay.
As well.
So you saw your coach get excited.
Yeah.
And then that gave you some confidence to kind of go after it a bit.
Totally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is that the distance you like now the most, or is it the half? Is it the 10,000?
I love, like, they're so, I'm really fortunate that I can do both, because any race on the track and any race on the road is so different. And because of that, I kind of consider them just, you know, completely separate. Yeah, there's, I love them both for different reasons. I think that the marathon and the half marathon, for me, they just come so naturally, and that's really fun. Like, you know, I love going for the long tempo runs and just progression runs out on the roads, and having your coach bike with you and give you bottles, and then kind of the analytical side of it and the tracking your mileage. I love all that. At the same time, there's nothing quite as fun as, like, being super fast for track season, and my definition of super fast in a track runner's definition of super fast are probably different, but yeah, I really just kind of enjoy both of them. But I think that knowing, you know, how much it takes out of my body to do track running, I think I probably do prefer road running.
Mm, okay. And so then you went after the half marathon.
So I ran 72:07 in New York for my first half. It was my second half marathon, but first one I'd really kind of targeted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was positive. Like, I actually got injured during that segment. I got plantar fasciitis, which
anyone's ever had.
It's a nasty one, yeah. Mm-hmm. It hurts a lot more than necessarily needs to, but it was, I remember like being close to not being sure if I should start the race that day, but I was also fit enough that Rich, my coach, was like, I think it's worth the gamble. Like, you've worked this hard, and half marathons you don't get a lot of shots at. So he was like, I think it's worth you doing it, but you have to accept that you're going to have to take some time off after. And that was exactly what happened. I started working with a physio named Mary Lou, who works with a lot of Canada's top distance runners, and she's amazing. She did a lot of work on my biomechanics, and I think that actually just made me a better athlete on a whole. So actually that injury was a real blessing because it showed me, I think every athlete gets away with quite a bit until they try to do something really long or really fast and then something comes up and it forces them to address that. And that's basically what happened. And then I managed to qualify. I kind of got the plantar fasciitis under control over the next month and then managed to qualify for the world championships in the 10K that summer. So I got to go to Europe and do the whole Europe racing thing, placed 20th at Worlds, which I was really happy with. And yeah, it was fun. It was in London and it was just an amazing stadium and amazing experience. So
That's crazy. And then when did the, and like, did you keep racing halves after that? Like, that's a 112, right? You said?
Yeah. Yeah. So I tried to do, I'm a huge believer, especially after what I've gone through in my own career, on taking time off. And so I get shockingly out of shape between, you know, my peak summer season and when I take time off. And I think it always shocks me. I think it always shocks my coach how I can go from running like so fast to like, you know, so not well. So, yeah, I mean, but like I took my time off. I did like, I don't know, 10 days of not running. I like went out with my siblings. I like went to my cabin and my dad and I spent a few days in London together, just really relaxed. And started kind of, you know, Rich gave me some runs and I kind of upped it. And then I came back to doing workouts and he was like, what happened? Like, and so we planned on me doing this half marathon that fall. And he was like, yeah, you're so strong. You'll be fine. I ran like terrible. That was in November.
What's terrible for you?
I honestly like probably like 74 high or something. Okay. I have to look.
My best is 118. So I'm like, that's like still blistering.
Yeah. But it was like for someone who had run, you know, 72 minutes with plantar fasciitis, it was like kind of shocking. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, then I kind of pulled my socks up and started focusing on the details a bit better. And, again, you know, medaled at the cross country championships again. And then I ran the Houston half marathon in the winter. And I remember feeling like at that time that my fitness was really coming around. And I kind of, for me, once it starts clicking, it does take off quite quickly. And it had done that. And I ran a PB. I think I just narrowly broke 72 minutes. But the Houston course is quite a bit faster than the New York course. So it was probably like a comparable time. I was happy. I felt really strong in it. And I just felt like I was back to myself. But I remember also feeling like I just need like 2 more weeks and I'm going to run great. And so sure enough, 2 weeks later, we found a local half marathon. It had like a bonus, $1,000 bonus if you won the record. Mm-hmm. So Chris, my husband, did it with me and kind of paced me through it. And it was going great. Like, you know, we go off. I feel really strong. I'm hitting all the splits easy. He hasn't actually paced me for a half in a while, but the way we used to do it is we'd actually run beside each other. So I was kind of more set in the tempo and, you know, he's just with me, keeping me company and it was going really well. And then, I don't know if you've had this in half marathons, but I had some GI troubles, which has never happened to me before. And it was super embarrassing because there wasn't a lot of places to stop and you're like with your husband and running's not lucrative. We really needed the money. So I had to keep going and it was not fun. but you know, not a position I expected to find myself in. And, I got the record, though, like, pretty comfortably. I think I ran, like, 72 low again. I stopped twice. And so after that, my coach was like, I think you could run the half marathon record. Like, I really think that, you know, given it wasn't a fast course and I was only 2 minutes off it, stopping twice to go to the washroom. So he looked online, because there's not a lot of half marathons available, and found this super, like, cryptic course down in Woodlands, Texas. It's crazy flat. And he kind of looks it on the map. He's an engineer, so he's very good at, like, data stuff and Google Maps. And he was like, this course is real. Like, this is a fast course. So we, there wasn't even, like, an elite category. Like, we just registered. We flew ourselves down. The three of us, like, drove to Seattle, got in an airplane, flew down. He didn't tell anyone we were doing it. Like, even the people in my group knew we were all going to be out of town. I'm sure they knew what we were doing, but he didn't tell them what we were doing. And then, Chris and I, like, got up, ran the race together, and it was, you know, pretty early in Vancouver, so when everyone woke up, I got the record. And that was, you know, pretty fun. And just after that, that was when I knew I was going to do the marathon. So then I had Commonwealth Games after that. So
what was that? Was your goal to do that, like, when you started running halves? Or, like, I always wonder, like, when you set, like, 5, 10, half, like, what's, is the goal always the same? Like, to qualify for the Olympics, to get a national record, like, when it's someone at your level.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, like, I'm running because I want to improve my time.
Right, yeah.
Like, I want to get the fast qualifying time for Berlin and London and Tokyo. And I'll just when you were saying about emptying the tank when you can't run anymore, like, I ran Toronto, the full in 2:45:03. And it's like the qualifying mark is 2:45, and but you just know you can't give anything more.
Totally.
Which is a really satisfying feeling at the same time. But back to my question, like, is the goal always the same for you? Like, you're a top athlete, clearly, like, you have the speed, you put in the work and all this, but, like, is it always, like, break the record, Olympic qualifying?
I think that's, like, one of the great things about running is it's all, like, relative to what you just did. So, like, for you, you know, maybe next goal you want to break 2:40. Like, when I got into the sport, I definitely did not ever think I would do everything I've done now. Every time I've got too greedy and I've set my sights too high, it's not worked out for me. And the best thing you can do, like, even when I hit that record, it was, like, the first marathon was, like, half marathon, sorry, the goal was to run. I wanted to run around 72 minutes. That was when my workouts were showing, and I felt that was a really good kind of first mark. And then the next one I did, I took seriously, I wanted to PB. And then the next one after that, I wanted to run the course record. And then because that suggested that I could run the Canadian record, that became the next goal. So I think it's, you know, the situation in each race is so different. That's kind of what's really fun about it. Like, last night at the 5K championships, my goal was to medal. It wasn't to run a fast time, but the race before that, it was to hit the world championship standard. And so, you know, that whole race, I was kind of trying to find that balance between checking the clock regularly enough that you know where you are, while still not getting stuck on the clock, because that's quite exhausting and you want to focus on racing. It was really fun last night just to show up, and I remember, like, going through 200 meters and being like, you don't need to look at the splits. Like, this doesn't matter at all. And, you know, every once in a while I kind of noticed a 3K split because I was curious what it was. But, like, but I didn't really, I didn't need to look at the clock, and it was so much fun to, like, have a chance to race in contrast to the race before, where it had been all, you know, are you on split? So, yeah, every race is a bit different, but you kind of just follow the path as it presents itself to you.
Mm. So after you hit the national record, you said, like, well, let's go for the marathon.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a point when you do something really big that it can be actually quite tough. Like, when you get your goal, sometimes, you know, you did everything you wanted, you aced it, and then you can have a bit of this now what feeling. And it's like, it's a letdown that I've kind of just learned happens, and it's normal. Maybe not for everyone, but for me it's normal. And then you have to kind of relax, unwind, and then look forward to the next goal. After the half marathon, I had a goal of the Commonwealth Games, so there was actually a quick turnaround to that. And then I wanted to just to see how fast I could run on the track for, like, a really mini season, because we'd already started looking at Berlin at that point. So that meant I wasn't going to have a track season. I had a track season, but it was cut very short because of that. So, yeah, I definitely kind of have been jumping from thing to thing to thing, basically, ever since that.
Mm-hmm. And what's the goal now? Like, what's the...
I'm doing Pan Am Games in a week. And then I'm taking a little bit of a break, mm-hmm. because when I look through the past year, and I'm, like, sick right now, and I know I don't actually get sick either. The last time I got sick was, I'm pretty sure, after the Olympic fiasco was the last time I got sick. So every time I have a cold, I know that there's something. I got sick 3 times that year. That's how stressed I was. But I know that there's something not quite right. So I'm going to take a week of kind of recovery, and then I have the world championship standard, but I'm ranked fourth. So I'm kind of waiting on one girl not doing it. Like I placed third at a national championships and I have the standard. So I'm in a good spot, but I'm very solidly fourth. So we'll see if I'm able to make that or not. One of the girls qualified in both the 15 and the 5K. So it'll be interesting to see what she decides. I'm really hopeful I get to go to Doha. I think it would be a cool experience, but I'm also just looking forward to the Olympics. So for the next 2 weeks is all about Pan Ams. It's an opportunity I have. I've never done Pan American Games. I'm super excited for that. And then it's about recovery. And then that takes me to like about a week before I'll find out about Worlds. So just kind of waiting after that.
Mm-hmm. And what do you feel is your like greatest accomplishment to date? In all the races you've done and all the
stuff. It's probably the Canadian record and in the marathon. I mean, that's probably what I'm at this point most known for.
Well, it just happened I feel 4 months ago or something like that, right? In Japan?
In Japan, yeah. No, I mean, I think, yeah, without question that even based on IAAF points and world rankings, that's probably my best result. So, that was really cool. I feel like there was kind of a year there where I was very much a roadrunner, and I'm excited to get back to that. It's been fun having a chance to go back to the track and kind of relive the track. But I do know my future in the long run is probably on the roads.
Mm-hmm. And what does it do to you as a runner when you accomplish something that big? I mean, you probably had you probably got a bit of attention when you got the half record.
Yeah.
And then the marathon after,
I got a lot more with the marathon than the half. I mean, the half marathon's on an Olympic distance. It was really fun. I loved the way we did it. It was such a special, it was that weekend in general that I got the half marathon record is probably one of the highlights of my athletic career. We just went down to this small town called Woodlands, Texas with my coach, and we my husband was there, and the three of us had this super sneaky thing that we did. But compared to going to a major marathon and running a Canadian record, it's kind of didn't get as much attention, which is probably fair enough. You get a lot of publicity when you run any marathon. Gets a lot more publicity than anything on the track, so that was new. And then it being the record was obviously just a lot of attention. Kind of a month there was
a lot going on,
a lot of questions. Yeah,
and you beat it by good two, is it 2 minutes or? It's
almost a minute and 4 seconds, okay. I guess. So the record before was set by Lanny Marchant and it was 2:28 flat, which, yeah, it's a very round number. Mm-hmm. You kind of knew exactly what it was. Yeah. And the Japanese, I went to this women's only Japanese race and they'd been hoping to run under 2:28 to qualify them for the Olympic trials. So it was the perfect opportunity to do it because the Canadian record and the just the Japanese running is insane. Literally, our Canadian record was their same mark that they had to do to qualify for the Olympic trials. Not the team, just the trials. But that was super convenient for me, so that's why I went there. And then I managed to get under 2:27, which was also kind of my goal. I thought I could run in the 2:26s. So when I came in with 200 to go, I was fine, but I closed pretty hard just in case because I was pretty close to being in the 2:27s.
Mm-hmm. And only your second marathon.
Yeah. It's, but I'm a veteran runner. I had the fastest Canadian debut for a marathon runner, but I would have to look carefully at who's done the marathon in Canada in the past. But I have a whole athletic career, but Cam Levins, was a very experienced athlete when I came into the marathon. So you compare to Lanny and Krista, they started their athletic careers at a really high level at the marathon and moved their way through. Whereas, I know Lanny did go to the U.S. and do track and field there, but she wasn't running post-collegiately in the 10K. She started in the marathon, and then her 10K came down with her marathon and stuff. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think I was just at a very different stage in my career when I started the marathon, which has allowed me to start at a higher level than I probably would have otherwise. Mm-hmm. Because I kind of did all my learning with the 5K and chopped up some bad ones there.
That's a painful race, too, I gotta say. Where do you find the inspiration and the motivation to keep on going and pursuing this running career?
I think the people around me, I obviously just love it, and I love everything about it. I love the community. I love the people I've met. I love kind of this, like, I'm a very analytical person, and I love kind of trying to pick apart the pieces of how you can get better. And I think that's probably, like, even going into 2016 before anything else happened, I knew I was going to stay in the sport because I could see this path forward of how I was going to improve. And I think that's, yeah, very much where my motivation comes from, is A, enjoying it, enjoying the process and the training and the people in it, and then B, just, you know, having this, like, path that you can see how you're going to get better.
Mm. And do you feel like a difference in your confidence since you were a kid?
Outside of running? Or
just, like, yeah, general? I think, has it given you, like, a newfound confidence almost? Or?
I think so. I think most kids, in hindsight, are shy and trying to figure out, you know, where they belong in life. And if you're fortunate to become an adult who, you know, finds something they love, that, you know, your confidence will definitely follow with it. But yeah, most people I know who've gone on to have, you know, done cool careers, their confidence has increased significantly with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, like, what are some, like, lessons that you've learned that you would, like, share with, someone just getting into the sport, or, like, you know, let's say yourself when you first started, like, if you could give a piece of advice, what would it be?
I think, you know, one big piece of advice I have for, like, anyone at any age is to focus on yourself. And in running, I think in particular, it's very easy to, like, read some blog and see what someone else is running or have a result that's really good for you, but, you know, you place 50th or something. And any time in the sport I've got focused on someone else, it doesn't work well for me, because you really can't control what other people do. Another thing that used to stress me out and now actually gives me a lot of peace is that, like, you really can only deal with the pieces you have. And, you know, I'm not likely to be a sub 15 minute 5K runner. Like, it's just not going to be me. So I need to find a way to find joy. And, you know, I think I can run on the 15:10s. I think I can break 15:20. And that's not as impressive as some other people in the world. But I think a lot of it is finding joy in what you can achieve and how you can get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's how you enjoy the sport.
Yeah, I've certainly loved it. It's been like 9 years for me now, just kind of like always playing soccer and stuff as a kid, and hockey. I still play hockey, but just trying to like find that progression and like being it, like you said, it for the long game.
Yeah, and I think if you enjoy being outside, like one of my absolute favorite things to do, and still, you know, if I'm training really hard, I do start hating the everyday of running, but I think that's normal. But one of my, like, absolute favorite things to do is just be out in the woods with, like, my training partners or my husband or, like, you know, my parents or my coach on a bike with me and just going for a run. And I think if you can find, you know, it's really critical to find, if you're going to chase any goal, to find the pieces that you enjoy.
Hmm.
But, yeah, running is just amazing. Like, you get to be out in the woods or the trails or whatever. You're so much more in tune with nature and the world around you. And most people who do distance running are great people. Mm-hmm. So you get to meet them, which is fun.
Yeah, I've met quite a few of them. What does a training week look like for you now, like when you're ramping up? I mean, it's got to vary from...
Totally, yeah. The marathon was so different. I feel like that's probably what people are more interested in general. But, yeah, I run somewhere in track season. Right now my mileage is probably like 55, 60 miles a week. But the heat of marathon training, my mileage was actually still pretty low for a marathon runner. I think it's a place I could probably improve on, but we've just tried to build it up slowly. So for Berlin, I probably average like 95 miles a week. And then Nagoya, the second one, the first month was kind of the higher end of that, like 95 to 100. That just about killed me. I wasn't ready to handle that much volume. So, we backed that down, and I was probably down in the low 90s for a few months instead. That build was just a little bit different because I could rely much more on the strength I had from Berlin the first time around. We kind of hit it too hard the first month, and I was kind of in recovery mode for the rest of it. But I typically do, like, depending on where it's in, 2 to 3 workouts a week. But normally one of those is, like, a progression run or a... yeah, like kind of a long run with maybe some pickups in it or something. And then 2 of the workouts, depending on what you're doing, will be like kind of, one will likely be like the targeted distance that you're working at. So if I'm training for like a 10K, I'll probably do a 10K specific workout and then run a little bit faster. With the marathon, the training was a lot more kind of off track and road things, but we still kept up with speed and I would do K repeats on the track and things like that. And then I do weights once or twice a week. I pool run like 3 times a week. Really think that's a good part of distance running training, and cross training's important. And then the rest of it is just fitting in runs. My coach isn't a huge believer in doing double days. Like, he's kind of the mindset that, and I agree with this completely, that 80 miles a week doing over 7 runs is a lot more than 80 miles doing 10 runs. So on workout days, I'll double. Like, if I have a track workout in the evening, I'll do a 5-mile run in the morning. But even then, I don't do a lot of runs that are less than half an hour. So all my volume is very, like, specific and long and targeted.
And have you always done strength training, or is that...
Yeah, more so now. Again, one of the many things I discovered in the 2012 Olympic build was that strength training is important. And, I've trained with 2 coaches since 2012. And the first one I worked with... is a kind of coaches. He used to coach at UBC. He's actually just left that, but he was a high school coach at the time when I first started working with him, and he really instilled, like, you need to be doing more strength. This is how you're going to stay healthy, and he was right. So we did that, and then Richard, my current coach, also understands the importance of strength, but one thing that he's really good at doing is he knows what he knows, and he knows when he doesn't know something, and for him, he's complete genius when it comes to distance running and completely values strength training, but is also kind of going, well, I could learn all about strength training, or I could just refer you to someone who already knows it. So I work with a strength coach outside of him, and she's awesome. She works with my physio closely. So I'll meet with her like once every other month. She'll give me a program. My physio will review it and just make sure that there's nothing I should be concerned about. And we'll go through that if there's something I'm doing a little funny. And then, yeah, I do that once or twice a week. It's very much like the way Rich puts it is that if you're tired or sick, it's the first thing that goes. Like, compared to mileage and stuff like that, it's not the critical piece of distance running, but I think it's important to keep up with that.
Yeah, totally. And I've started to implement it a bit more, too, because you're just putting so much wear and tear on the body, like, especially when you get up in mileage. And I've only hit, like, in... last 2 years, just run focus because I was in triathlon before.
Right.
Hitting about 100K a week. And then now I'm going to talk to my coaches. I'm like, hey, let's maybe try and like bump it up a little bit. So get into like the 120K. But like certainly like having that strength training and like stuff like pool running is cool. Like this kind of low impact.
Yeah. It's like I call it a poor man's massage sometimes. Mm-hmm. Just in there like fleshing out and... I think that's, since working with Rich, he does a lot of, like, different things like that. Like, pool running is important, strength training is important. We also do this thing called drills and strides, kind of once. You're going to end up doing 3 times a week that you touch on, like, nervous system stuff. So whether you're doing weights twice a week and drills and strides once a week or vice versa, basically we do, like, a combination of lunges and some type of plyos, like A's, B's, or bounding, whatever, and then intertwine that with 6 strides. So, and you just kind of do it halfway through a run. What I love about that and the pool running and the strength is it just breaks things up. So sometimes on a Monday, I'll do maybe like a 4-mile run, drills and strides, and the 2-mile run. So it's a 6-mile run, but in the middle, you get to like do something different. Mm-hmm. And mentally, I think that's really helpful. And same thing with strength training, like distance running is all about pacing yourself and like, you know, can I hold this for this long? And is this the right tempo? Strength training is like you have 2 seconds to lift this focus and then it's over. And that's not how you think in distance running. And I think that's really like nice to have that balance.
No, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I like having the variation too. Yeah. And even I find like I do like just running routes too. I don't know if you do the same. Like, do you traditionally follow the same routes or you go and run something different?
No, I just mean different. The marathon again was so different. That's one of the things I loved about it. But I did a lot more mapped routes when I did that. So, but again, like Richard, when I was training for the marathon, he would map a route out for us and he'd always change it. Like you were rarely doing the same route. I guess when I was training for the marathon, that was the only time that I had like a 10-mile loop that I did. And I did the same one every time. But that was good data just to know how fast I was doing it. But One thing I don't do is I don't wear a GPS watch. It's never been a positive thing for me. I'm really competitive. I do my off day runs plenty quick. So the last thing I need is a watch, you know, competing with me during the run. So yeah, I just, every like maybe once a month, I'll take an inventory and just either map a run out after I've done it or check my GPS watch and just make sure that I am running the paces I suspect I am. But if I have, like, I do everything in miles. So if I have a 10-mile run, I guess that I run 7-minute miles. I probably go a little quicker than that. But yeah, I'll run for 70 minutes. If I feel absolutely terrible, maybe I'll run 72 minutes because maybe I'm going slower. If I feel great and I'm running late to be somewhere, I'll run 68 minutes because I know that is probably still 7 miles. So I just try to be more flexible with those.
Very cool.
Things.
Okay, that's interesting. So do you have the watch on you but not on your wrist? Or
I have a watch, but it's just the Timex.
Okay.
Start, stop. I should probably get sponsored by them because I love Timex watches. I've got like piles of them at home.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have a Garmin that, again, I wore for marathon training and I use that. But yeah, it's such a freeing. I think that, like, you know, if you're doing 2 or 3 track workouts a week and you're lifting weights and you're doing strides and you're doing pool running, like, so much is measured. That at the end of the day, like, I did get into the sport because I just love going for an easy run on the trails. And so for me, not wearing a GPS watch just gives me that time. And some days you need to run slow. Like, some days you feel terrible. And, you know, I'm sure there's been runs where I've done, like, 7 45-minute miles for a long run. I don't need to know that I did that. I just need to get the run in, you know.
Yeah.
And then other days I felt great, and maybe I was running, like, 6:15s. But I probably shouldn't know that because, A, that's going to set an unrealistic standard, and maybe like that was the pace I needed to go on that run, and it's best I didn't know that because I might overthink it later. So yeah, some people like tracking their mileage and stuff, and I think that's kind of fun, but I stay off Strava. I just kind of do my thing.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool, because I think, yeah, I'm one of those guys, like, I like to see the weekly mileage and stuff like that and calculate everything. And not that I put stress on the paces or anything so much, especially on easy runs. Like, I could care less.
Yeah.
Like, I do a lot of my easy runs with groups, and I'll sit in the middle or the back of the pack, and it doesn't bother me. I just, like, chill out.
I think that's I think if someone who can do that, that's great. I'm not someone who can do that. So it's just kind of, yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sure if I actually wore GPS for a watch for a year, I might chill out a bit more, but I do track a lot. Like, I have a lot of like documents that I track, like my weekly mileage and things like that. But it's all based on this estimation of 7-minute miles.
Mm-hmm.
Then
cool. And do you run in groups too, or no?
Not often. I'm with Chris. I actually live with Vancouver's very expensive, so we live with another guy who's also a runner, and so he's also a full-time runner, so him and I will do a lot of our morning runs together. Always warm up and cool down with teammates. I like going for easy runs with people, but especially when I'm training hard, I kind of like to just be on my own and know my own paces, but I mix it up sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. So at the Olympics, what distance are we going to see you in?
You haven't qualified in the marathon.
If you had your dream kind of set up, what would it be? What would it look like?
I think I'd love to qualify in both the 10K and the marathon. Like, that would just be, I don't want to get greedy. Like, I'm very happy the way I'm at with the marathon. And I've qualified as far as the IWS is concerned. I've run the standard, but Canada's not selected, and there's still a lot of women chasing that standard. And I personally think we could see 3 or 4 women in Canada with that standard. So,
which is what?
It's 2:29:30.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I would love just, you know, for myself, my own accomplishments, to qualify in both the 10K and the marathon. I think that would be a cool thing to look back. As far as which one I would do, I would definitely assess which one I felt I was going to place better in and be more competitive in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I obviously can't lose sight of the marathon, because I have a mark and it's great, but it's going to expire and there's going to be other people going after it. So I'm not entirely, like, right now I'm focused on the track, and that's kind of where my mind's at. And then once that wraps up, I'll take some recovery and then kind of decide what path I need to take to put myself in the best spot for the Olympics.
Mm, kind of plan it out, look ahead.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of unknowns right now. There's not really a point in overthinking about it right now. You know, I have a great opportunity in 2 weeks at Pan Am Games, and that's kind of why I'm just trying to just focus on that.
Yeah, and I'm sure it will go really great.
I hope so.
Yeah. But does the mileage, one question I have is like with my overall mileage, when you have a track season versus like a marathon season, this might be a stupid question, but like, do you still do high mileage even when you're...
Yeah, track season, like, yeah, they're different. Like, I feel like the base concept of a marathon and a track season are just... The concepts are similar, but the way they play out are different. So with a marathon, you kind of pick, like, I want to do Berlin. And then you work backwards. Do I want to do 12 weeks, which is what I did for my first one. Some people do 16 weeks. So you kind of figure out how long you need based on where your mileage is at. And then you kind of, you know, hit yourself really hard with a lot of mileage and have a bunch of kind of 3 week blocks with a rest week in between. And so there's kind of a plan, and it's over a 3 to 4 month period. With a track season, you don't have the flexibility of like when your track season is going to be. It's going to be in the summer. You can't do a fall track season. And that's one thing that like I love about track is that it kind of follows a cyclical pattern with the season. And that had been kind of my reality for like 10 years. So doing the marathon and doing Berlin really changed that. Like, cause suddenly my fall was off and my summer was a base season. Like it was different. But with the, with the track, you do a base season. Like you really need to reset because in track, especially you hit your nervous system hard when you're racing a lot. So you make sure that you completely unwind, you recover. And then, you kind of set up your base just like with a marathon in the fall. And then you kind of get yourself used to holding a certain amount of mileage. You add some like kind of VO2 max tougher stuff in the winter, keeping your volume up high. And then you start adding speed and then you drop your volume. So it's kind of just like in some ways it feels like a marathon build, but it's drawn out of a whole year instead of, and your mileage is never as high, but your speed is significantly more.
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm just curious about that because I'm like running track once a week and trying to get my times down, but I'm training for a marathon.
Right, so. Yeah. I think touching up on speed is good. Yeah. Like, that's one thing that, like, yeah, my speed suffered miserably while I was doing the marathon build, but I still was on the track doing 800s and K repeats. So just a little bit less rest, and you don't actually want to go as hard. Like, that was one thing that got me in trouble in my second marathon build was that I was hitting high volume and I tried to hit speed. And when you're training for a marathon, like, you never want to finish a workout like on your hand, the hands on your knees and lactic acid, because you're not going to bounce back from that. You're not going to be able to hold your mileage. But that's not to say that, you know, you just kind of find your threshold when you're marathon training and you just hit it over and over again. Mm-hmm. So you still want to go fast, but you never want to like kick at the end of a marathon workout or anything like that.
Cool. Good advice for me. Thanks. I appreciate that. What does running mean to you?
I don't know. It's, I mean, it's kind of has always been a part of my life, and I've been fortunate that as I've got older, it's got to become a bigger part of my life. It still doesn't feel like a job. Like I'm doing it full time. I have lots of, you know, the sponsor. I'm kind of a professional athlete right now, but I still don't feel like it's my job. And, you know, sometimes I have to sit back and, you know, take it seriously because it's your job. But I think that's pretty cool that I'm kind of doing it every day. It's on paper, it's my job, but it's still kind of my hobby. So, it's kind of everything I do, but then, you know, it's just a part of my life at the same time.
It's nice when, you know, your job essentially is like, it's still your passion. You know, yeah. So, you know, you're passionate about it because it doesn't feel like work.
Exactly. Yeah. And I hope I'm always able to find a job that I love as much as this one.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to shout out anybody that's supporting you, or, you know, where can people find out more about Rachel Clare?
I'm on Instagram, kind of slowly getting more active. I have lots of support. I'm sponsored by On Running, which is a Swiss running shoe company. They make some pretty cool products, and part of the BC Endurance Project, so that's supported by BC Athletics, and have some help there and with Athletics Canada and things like that. But the best way to kind of follow me is through social media on Instagram or Twitter.
Awesome. Well, yeah, good luck to you and Pan Am and all your running goals and the Olympic qualifying and all that. We hope to see you kind of achieving everything you set out to achieve, and you've already done some just incredible things, and looking forward to seeing what you're up to next.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Let's head out for a run.
Sounds good.
This episode is brought to you by WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. Whatever your experience, age, or identity, you're welcome to join us at the base of Mount Royal every Monday at 7 p.m. Just look for the group of smiling faces next to the monument. Some run fast, some run slow. Who you'll meet, you never know. If you want to learn more, visit their website, iamarunner.ca, and check their Instagram, at WRGRuns. Hope to see you out there. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram, at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. La Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi. And hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.